Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Monday, April the 1st, 2024. Joining me in studio is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Good morning.
So have you had any pranks played on you yet this morning, or have you dished them out, Ed?
No. We don't have any, like, kids in the house, you know, that are young that you can prank easily. I used to love taking advantage of my kids when they were young.
Sure. And as every parent does.
And trusted me. Yeah. You know, and then I could tell them, you know, things, and they would be, you know, just bewildered or whatever. And I'd say, April Fool's, gotcha. So, you know, that's.
Yeah, that's yesterday.
That's yesterday. It's sad that I try fooling my wife, but she knows me so well.
Tell us a Marvel story.
The Marvel.
Do you mind doing that?
I don't mind. No.
I'm springing it on you. This is. Yeah, no. Thinking of yesteryear.
Yes, we were talking this morning about April Fools and in one of our meetings. And so I related this story when I was probably 8 or 9 years old, maybe 10. And I was the older. I had two sisters. And we decided to go all out for April Fools. And it was a Saturday. April 1st fell on a Saturday. So it was all day long, one prank after another, beginning with what we did to my mom. My mom was always the first one up. She'd go down. She'd fill the hot water kettle to make coffee. Well, I got up really early and put some black electrical tape on the handle of that little hose for the sink. So when she turned the water on, she first thing in the morning got doused with water.
And your own mother.
My own mother. And one thing after another. And finally, my dad got tired of it. And it was after supper, and he's a former Marine. He got very.
He went full Marine on
He you. Went full Marine and said, no, this is it. With no more April Fool's jokes. That better be it. Bop, 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 bop. And he was going upstairs to bed just an hour or two later, and I forgot that I had put marbles in his bed early on to get him before he went to bed. And I forgot until they had hardwood floors. He went upstairs, and I could hear the first marble and one marble after another dropped out of that bed. And I froze. I expected my dad to come flying down and throw me outside or something, you know, that kind of thing. But he never said a word, you know. He just yelled down the stairs, Edward, come up here and get these marbles. So I had to go up there and get all those marbles.
Edward, though?
Edward. So, but that chill that ran down my spine when I heard that first marble drop.
Had you forgotten?
I had forgotten that I had done it.
You'd done so many pranks during the day.
So many. And he goes upstairs. I thought, well, I guess I went one, two step too far. And then I heard that marble. Those marbles start to drop.
Oh, no. Yep. Oh, my word.
Okay. See, we had a rule in Canada that April Fool's jokes had to end at noon. I don't know where that came from.
My dad, I think.
You had to get it out of your system by noon, or it didn't count anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the best April Fool's jokes probably work about 7 o'clock at night. Yes. Because everybody thinks it's over.
Right.
And then you spring it on them. Right. I'm just not good at doing pranks like that because I'm always afraid somebody will have a heart attack or something in response to them, you know, or get injured.
Yes.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah, those are the ones you really never live those down.
Right. All right. Listen, next hour, our own John Riley, mm-hmm. who just returned from, I don't know, 10 days or so?
Yeah, about that.
In Israel?
Yes.
On the ground, reporting in Israel, and he's going to come in. He joined us once from the Holy Land and on this show last week, and he's going to be on live in studio. He's returned now to the States, and he's going to talk to us in an hour from now about his journey, about his trip, what he saw.
Who he interviewed.
Who he interviewed. Fred, in fact, there's some protests going on in Israel from citizens, right?
Yeah, according to various news reports, thousands of Israelis took to the streets in Jerusalem yesterday. Some of them were
Tel Aviv and Haifa.
Yes.
So they had demonstrations across the country.
Across the country. Some of the demonstrators, according to reports, were families of hostages
right.
still being held. It is a tense time in Israel. For the most part, according to polling and according to Prime Minister Netanyahu, the country is still behind him overall in his war against Hamas. That is in place. But they believe more could be done to get the release of the hostages that are still being held, more than 100, and also the bodies of those who are the deceased hostages. They believe there are at least 30 or so of the hostages who have passed away. So, but what many people believe is that a surrender, a ceasefire, an extended ceasefire right now would give Hamas exactly what they want. And they would regroup again. You know, you can understand if you're a family of a hostage, you want that family right. member home. Do whatever you can, whatever has to be done to get those family members home. But when you back away, the larger picture of all of this is that you can't stop now. In fact, it's very interesting. Right now, there is a story out there that campaign that Israel's had, a specific campaign of the war against this hospital, and you've probably heard of this large hospital, Shifa Hospital. Israel has backed away from there. But the former Israeli Prime Minister Bennett reported this morning that in that operation, now this is at this hospital, 200 Hamas terrorists were killed. 500 Israeli army took 500 into custody. And according to the former Prime Minister Bennett, not one civilian was killed in that operation.
That's extraordinary.
But think about those numbers. The mainstream media, for the most part, is all they focused on, Israel's attacking a hospital again.
Right.
Israel's attacking a hospital again. But 700, 200 Hamas terrorists killed, 500 taken into custody, all in that hospital operation, which just goes to confirm how Hamas operates.
Right. Because, as you said, the mainstream media is focused on Israel's military actions against the hospital,
yes.
but Hamas is using it as a headquarters. And if Hamas cared about civilian lives,
yes.
which is what they pretend,
mm-hmm.
Then they wouldn't be at a hospital.
Yeah.
They'd be fighting on the open battlefield, but they don't want to do that. Because public opinion in terms of the world wide community and the use of hostages as bargaining chips and ways to extend the war or gain an advantage is the way this particular terrorist group operates.
Yes.
This is going on, coming up on 6 months.
Right? It is, since October the 7th. And increasing pressure Israel is facing from the United States. Former Secretary of State under President Trump, Mike Pompeo, was on Fox just a few moments ago. And he says, you know, Israel, despite all of the opposition, the United Nations, etc., has got to stay the course on this. Cut eight.
The fight is not over. Hamas is not yet defeated. And that is the central task. If you're going to get hostages back, the only way to do it is to put pressure on Hamas and pressure on Iran. Those are the two pinch points. They're the decision makers for releasing these hostages. And anything else will just show weakness. There'll be more hostages taken. We shouldn't forget. We watch these protests, and we sometimes here at home forget there's Americans that continue to be held there. And putting pressure on Hamas, not letting UN resolutions pass that call for ceasefires, that's a U.S. mistake. Not allowing Hamas to confiscate food that's being delivered there and use it for their own purposes. Those are the things that encourage Hamas to continue their war. They need to be defeated, Bill. That's the only answer to getting these people home.
Well, that's former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who served under President Trump. You know, this is the difficulty, for lack of a better word, that Israel faces, is that the enemy doesn't wear uniforms.
Right.
the enemy is a terrorist organization who mixes in with the general population. And the world, much of the world gets angry with Israel for firing upon and sending soldiers into areas where civilians live. Well, the civilians are mixed in with Hamas. And so can you imagine how hard it is to say every step of the way, we must be so careful as to not kill any civilians or innocent people, all the while looking for an enemy behind a hiding behind, you know, a building or in a tunnel. You know what I'm saying? And then you make one wrong step, boom, then the world condemns you. It's a very precarious war that they are undertaking in that sense. You know, it's almost like urban warfare. Yeah. But it is urban warfare, I guess. So Israel also is thinking to themselves, well, we don't want our soldiers to get killed either. I mean, right. So we got to watch out for them. So do we send them down a tunnel?
Right.
Do we send them into here, there, or the other? If we do, we better be sure that they're going in after the right targets. So in that sense, it's a no-win situation. Also, I tried to explain this last week with respect to the Gaza Strip, which is where this is going on. Imagine, let's just use the state of Florida, for example. Let's just say that the Gaza Strip is the state of Florida. What Israel's done is they have won the war all the way down to Miami. Okay, they've cleaned up down Florida, which is Gaza, let's say, down to Miami. And now a lot of people who are refugees, a lot of people have been condensed into a small landmass that were otherwise in the other part of Florida. They were in Orlando and Jacksonville and Panama City. Well, now they're all down in Fort Lauderdale, for the most part, Fort Lauderdale, Miami area. And now Israel's trying to decide, do we go into Miami, Fort Lauderdale and try to clean this up with all these people? And right. Many of them are hungry and they're desperate and they don't have their way of life has been upended. And don't get me wrong, I'm not exonerating them of responsibility because they supported Hamas. But the 7-year-old child doesn't
right.
know what's going on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So you do have a humanitarian crisis. But so the dilemma that Israel faces is, do we continue on knowing that a lot of people who aren't combatants are going to be killed and we're going to get blamed for it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. This is the way it's called, asymmetrical warfare. This is what you do if you're a terrorist organization and you know you can't get on. I'm just speaking like this. I think people understand what I'm saying. You can't get on the same battlefield with the Israeli Defense Force. You're just not going to last. And these groups like Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in the Gaza
Strip, they use guerrilla warfare.
That's their only option. And you toss in the use of hostages. You get into large groups of civilians because your hope – initially, I think they were hoping to drag the rest of the Muslim world into a war against Israel. I'm talking about Syria, Iran, you know, maybe even
Turkey. Egypt.
Yeah, Turkey. I think they were hoping to do that. Now they are hoping to survive, I think Hamas is. That's why they're trying to string this out. The people who are sympathetic, and there's more of, I'll be honest, there's more of the more than I thought there'd be. People who'd be sympathetic to Hamas and more generally to the Palestinian cause. Now you're just trying to get them to operate in the United Nations, so on and so forth, to get Israel to back out so that Hamas can survive to do this again in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's causing some turmoil inside Israeli politics with Benjamin Netanyahu and And, you know, a lot of the family members and those who support the family members of the hostages are obviously frustrated. They've been wanting their loved ones to come home. If they don't even know if they're still alive or not.
Right.
So a lot of them are blaming Netanyahu for not being able to get the hostages back by now. Right or wrong, they're blaming him.
Plus, I would say this. I don't know how many. Do you know what the population is of Israel?
I'd like to say around, is it 8 million?
Yeah, 9 million. Nine million.
So you can get thousands of people to show up for a protest.
Yeah.
It looks huge.
Right. But is it really representative?
But is it really representative of the vast majority?
John Riley will know that.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter for the purposes of television and social media.
That's true.
And for the opinions of on the world stage. So these kinds of things make politics and war very tricky business.
Is God on Israel's side, Ed?
Well, I'm first of all, I'm not going to speak for God in specific instances. My belief is that God is still going to keep his promises to the Jewish people and to the nation of Israel. But I'm not going to say God is in favor of Netanyahu's strategy in this particular part or phase of the war.
Gotcha.
I sometimes don't even know what God's opinion is of my life, you know. But generally speaking, I believe God will preserve the nation of Israel.
Right.
But as far as, you know, specific policies on the part of Israel, I don't know.
But we do have historical evidence, since Israel was reformed as a nation in 1948, when those Muslim nations surrounding Israel have attacked, God has been shown his miraculous force in defeating the enemy.
Yes.
When Israel didn't even have weapons, they didn't have an air force to begin with, but God intervened.
Yes,
in that,
and you hear testimonies of Jewish Israeli soldiers saying, "I don't know how this happened."
Yeah.
You know, Israeli tanks. Yeah. I mean, enemy tanks. Being abandoned because they thought that the enemy was behind them.
Yes.
So. You know, I'm not going to, what I'm about to say is not, it's just a thought, okay? But Alice and I were talking the other day, my wife, and you remember it was either the day or the day after that the United States refused to support Israel in the UN. You remember this?
When they abstained in the Security Council, you mean?
It was either that day or the day after is when that ship hit the bridge and the bridge collapsed and upended a major port in America and is going to cost billions and billions of dollars. Okay, so we were talking about how many times in history when America had dissed Israel and something terrible on a big scale happened that day or the very next day.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm just throwing that out there for what it's worth, but that is a provable.
It'd be interesting to track some of that.
Yeah, I've seen those. I've seen that. Have you seen that before? I can't recite it verse by verse right now, but
there was a case. I think it was at the time when Israel was under pressure to basically hand over Gaza to Hamas. Was it 2005?
2005.
George W. Bush was president at the time. Israel faced a lot of pressure, you know, two-state solution. Everything will just be fine if you just hand over. Israel forced its own citizens out of Gaza. I think there was a hurricane shortly after that.
Yeah.
That devastated America. So I think there is truth to what you're indicating there.
Well, I've seen that before, that chart of things that have happened to the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah.
2005.
Yep.
That was Hurricane Katrina, right?
It was September 2005, Israel's final withdrawal from the entire
Gaza when they withdrew from Gaza. Okay,
yes.
Yeah, I remember that when they pulled their people out of Gaza, they pulled the Jews out and gave it all to the Palestinians. It upset a lot of Israelis who had homes there and were living there.
Yes.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Anyway, we'll talk to John Riley, who just got back from Israel. We'll talk to him at the top of the hour. Next story, Fred.
Well, the other big story that was in the news during the weekend, the Easter weekend, the Biden administration was sharply criticized yesterday. March 31st was Transgender Day of Visibility. And
it was what?
Transgender Day of Visibility, March 31st.
It is every year that year, right?
It is that day. That date. But it fell on Easter Sunday, one of the most important days, some would argue the most important day of the Christian calendar. And I think folks were upset because so much attention of the White House was given to that and very little attention given to the fact that this is such an important day for Christians. Among those who criticized the White House, Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn, cut one.
I think everyone should be insulted by this, the intentional nature of this. Easter is a religious holiday. It is such a sacred day where we all meet at the cross. And for this White House to declare it, to issue a proclamation for Transgender Visibility Day, and then at the same time to deny the use of religious symbols in the White House Easter egg hunt art competition. Think about that one. They are insulting every Christian who holds this day as a sacred day.
Listen, Biden claims to be a Christian. That's what he said yesterday.
And he, I think, regularly attends Mass.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be.
I've never heard his testimony. Has anybody ever heard Biden's personal testimony?
Nope.
Have you, Ed?
I think he said that he was there on at the Sermon on the Mount. I think he said, didn't he? Didn't he say that? He said, I walked that Damascus, that road to Emmaus.
You know, the sad thing about it is I wouldn't be surprised if he did say that. Huh?
No, I've never heard him talk about
his conversion.
Yeah.
I've never heard him. He'll say he's a Catholic and he goes to Mass, but I've never heard him say, you know what, Jesus Christ is my Lord and my Savior, and he changed my life, and I want to tell you about it. I've never heard him say that.
Nope.
I've never heard Trump say that either.
Nope. Right.
For that matter, former President Trump. So if I can't hear a personal, at some point, now I will say this, even non-Christians, leaders can commemorate a religious holiday of all kinds. Okay. So I know that former President Bush, you know, he recognized Ramadan because so many Muslims, in the U.S. and around the world. So there's nothing necessarily wrong with recognizing a religious holiday of another sort.
As a political leader.
You're the leader of all the people. So there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, if you're a Christian president, to say, you know, happy Hanukkah, or we wish the Jews in the U.S. Happy Hanukkah. See, nothing wrong with that. I just never, but if I don't hear think about the big man upstairs kind of stuff, then I doubt their salvation.
Yeah.
Because you have to have a story. You have to have a moment in time when you say, you know what, I surrendered my life to the gospel of Christ because it's because the Bible teaches you're not saved by your grandparents.
Right.
Okay. It's each individual must give their heart to Jesus Christ. Repent of your sin, give your heart to Jesus Christ, trust in the Lord for salvation. And I just, like Biden, I've never heard that. It was, I'm a good Catholic. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, let me just say, take a different tack here. I think it was good that the president had Transgender Visibility Day yesterday, because you hardly ever see them, transgender people. They're never on beer commercials. Yeah. They're never on, you never see them at libraries.
You never hear about them.
Did you know that every day, Preborn's network of clinics experiences 200 miracles? How? Preborn gives women with unplanned pregnancies a window into their womb through free ultrasounds, introducing them to the beautiful life growing inside. Once she meets her child inside her womb and hears their heartbeat, the chance of her baby's life doubles. Because of the generosity of you and me, who donate just $28 to sponsor an ultrasound, Preborn can do this. The cost of a dinner to save a life, the most worthwhile investment you can make. All gifts are tax deductible and go entirely to saving babies. Someday you may meet a baby that you rescued and you can give them a hug. Or maybe they'll give you a hug. Maybe they'll even save your life as they grow and pursue meaningful careers. One thing is for sure, you will never regret saving a child's life because life is a miracle. Please donate your best gift today. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody. Tim, Ed, and Fred. Ed, tell people how they can watch us on what you affectionately call that their internet.
Well, you have three options. We do have a live video stream of this program during the show.
Uh-huh.
And so you can catch that three different ways. You can go to our own streaming service, streaming.afa.net.
And we created that just for you people.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so streaming.afa.net, you can catch the live video stream. There's two other ways you can go. If you want to go to the pagans in order to watch it, you can do that. You can go to either Facebook or YouTube, and you can search Today's. That's right. Be a witness on there. You can just search for Today's Issues on YouTube. It's Today's Issues Live. We are now also live streaming American Family Radio on X, formerly known as Twitter. And for that, you do have to search for American Family Radio, and then you'll catch whatever program is airing the video stream live at that time.
Hey, I know that. I don't know how many of you follow college athletics, but in the women's basketball tournament, the NCAA women's basketball tournament, they're down to the men are down to the final four. You got NC State, Alabama. Alabama's making their first appearance in the final four ever.
Wow.
You know, so basketball's getting a little love. Right, and then you got Purdue, and they've got this 7'4" giant who's an outstanding basketball player. Of course, he scored like 40 something points yesterday against Tennessee, I think. And then you've got UConn, so you've got a good geographical dispersion.
This is for the women or the men?
Men. You got UConn. UConn, University of Connecticut.
Because the UConn usually has an excellent women's team.
They do, yeah. Yeah, they're basketball school for sure. You never hear about them in football,
right.
UConn. But so it's UConn, Alabama, Purdue, and who was the other one I said?
Did you already say NC State?
NC State. Yep. Yeah, NC State's a Cinderella team because they're like 11th seed. They like lost 14 games. In the regular season.
Wow, they made it to the final four.
Yeah, they're the team going to the final four with the most losses ever in the regular season, which only proves you just need to get hot for four
right
games.
Time. That's true about just about any sport.
Yeah, you need to get hot at the right time. Right. But anyway, on the women's side, the reason I bring all this up on the women's side, there's two more spaces to be, NC State and – NC State, they may be going to the Final Four in the boys and the girls because I think they beat Texas yesterday in NC State did. And then they got South Carolina. They won yesterday. They're undefeated. But I say all that to say this. Am I right about NC State beating Texas in women's?
They did. They beat the number one Texas Longhorns 76-66.
Okay, so NC State's going to the Final Four in men's and women's. I don't know if that's ever been done. Maybe UConn did that. Probably UConn did that. Anyway, here's the point. Tonight, there's two more places left for the women's Final Four. And tonight is a epic clash between last year in a rematch of last year's national championship game, LSU and Iowa. And LSU won the national championship last year in women's basketball over Iowa in a drama-filled, dramatic fashion. But so they're saying that tonight's LSU-Iowa matchup may be the most watched women's basketball game in history.
I'll probably watch that tonight, but, yeah, since you said that.
Well, they've got Iowa's got that Caitlin Clark.
Oh, yeah. That's right, because there was a big dust-up last year.
Between her and LSU's Angel Reese.
One of them held up a hand in her face, yeah, or something.
Yeah. But I heard her commenting yesterday, Angel Reese of LSU. She's the one who held up her finger in Caitlin Clark's face and said, you know, I got the ring and you didn't, basically, which I think is terrible sportsmanship.
Right.
But she goes, she said, you know, we like each other. We're friends.
Yeah.
Off the court. Just when we get on the court, it's intense.
You know, and highly competitive people, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's a family.
Right. Larry Bird.
Yes.
Larry Bird was good friends with a lot of people, but he trash talked them on the basketball court.
One of the worst ever.
But as Yogi Berra said, it ain't bragging if you can back it up.
Yes, right? That's right.
But anyway, so tonight, Caitlin Clark, she averages like 30 points a game. She's like a phenom. She set the all-time NCAA women's and basketball scoring records. Anyway, it's just going to be a big-time matchup tonight between the LSU women and the Iowa women led by Caitlin Clark. Ironically, Caitlin Clark set the NCAA record for scoring, and the person that she, and that's men's and women's, the person that she moved ahead of was Pistol Pete Maravich.
Really?
Yeah. Who played his basketball at?
LSU, wasn't it?
Yeah. College basketball. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Ironic with a capital I.
And he, I think, had, I don't know if it was college or pro, but it's probably college. I always thought that he would never be surpassed. Maybe his points per game will never be surpassed.
It won't be.
It was like 40-something points a game average.
Without the three-point
yes, that's
shot.
Right.
Or the shot clock.
True.
I mean, so there'll never be another Pistol Pete Maravich as far as scoring. Now, she overcame him, but that was in 4 years. He did his in 3 years. I'm not taking anything away from her.
Right.
She's probably the best.
You're putting it in perspective.
She's the greatest female basketball player ever in college, if you go by scoring.
Right.
That would be true. But anyway, it's going to be a phenomenal matchup tonight. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Fred.
I was just watching some breaking news out of the Middle East. Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel has said all along they are ready to fight this war on multiple fronts, at multiple sites. And we're just getting news from Fox that Israel has struck an area in Damascus near the Iranian embassy there, apparently targeting...
That's in Syria.
That's...
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And apparently inside the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Israeli intelligence found out there are Iranian military leaders there.
I have no doubt. First of all, usually is the Israeli intelligence agency is unparalleled. Nobody's better.
Yes.
Maybe others, they're equal. But but also, Iran has set its course to try to dominate the Middle East.
Yes.
I have no reason to doubt that that's true.
Yeah.
Let's face it. Israel and Iran are at war. It's Hamas has its own cause, so to speak, but they're financially supported, everybody says, by Iran.
And so is
Hezbollah on the north, who are in Lebanon and, I guess, Syria, too. But Damascus is a city in another country, and Israel has launched a bomb.
Fox News was just reporting.
Has bombed Damascus?
Airstrike, yes.
Mm. Well, they must have thought it was extremely serious to
Well, Netanyahu has said all along that really the Iranians are running this war. And if you're going to ultimately stop this, you have to stop Iran. So this is a signal this morning that Israel is ready to hit hard at Iran directly.
And Biden was the one who gave Iran all the money, right? Remember that?
Oh, well,
he turned around all the.
He ended sanctions against Iran
that President Trump had in order.
Yeah, Obama gave them literally
a boatloads of cash, plane loads of cash.
Yes, and now not. And you're right about Biden. He ended some of the sanctions because the Iranians made a promise that they would not develop their nuclear weapons.
Yeah,
and that they wouldn't use money for anything military.
Yeah,
and you know you got to take them.
You got to trust the mullahs.
You got to trust the mullahs.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. The same ones that they say they want to destroy the little Satan and the great Satan.
Yeah.
The little Satan in Israel is the big Satan is the U.S.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, your next story, Fred.
Well, back here at home.
Meanwhile, back at home.
Back here in the U.S. of A., New York's governor, Democrat Kathy Hochul, over the weekend decided she would like to go to the funeral of a murdered New York police officer. Jonathan Tiller was his name. So she goes to the funeral. You may have seen this video. She shows up at this funeral. And she is encountered by a police union person. We do not hear the conversation, but it is animated. And the belief is that this police union official said, we don't want you here. This is not a place for you. Because Hochul, like many Democrat governors, have taken on police forces, have dissed police forces. New York police... veteran detective Allison Esposito on Hochul being turned away from this funeral. Cut number four.
And I watched her stand there, a hero in her own right. She made an impassioned plea to the elected officials. But just over 2 years ago, a widow did the same thing. Dominique Rivera begged our feckless leaders to do something about bail reform, to do something about holding criminals accountable. And it went on deaf ears. It fell on deaf ears.
Yeah, I was watching a Fox News report on this morning. There's been arrests made. We're talking now about people being arrested for murder who have been in and out of jail, charged dozens of times, and they're being released under these bail policies in states like New York, where we've seen these prosecutors that don't take crime seriously when it involves, you know, police officers. So a lot of anger out there. This is something I think the Democratic Party is going to have to face in this election once again. Their attitude towards police, what's going on at the border, maybe talk a little bit more about that shortly, and abortion. The Democrats feel that abortion is one of their big election issues. I was going to mention, you know, we talked about Biden and Transsexual Visibility Day. Just a few weeks ago, Vice President Harris became the first vice president in the United States in history to visit an abortion clinic where babies are being killed. She went up to Minneapolis, visited an abortion clinic there. This is all leading up to, not to mention the economy, to a real problem. A real problem for the Democratic Party, and they know they're in trouble.
Well, and on the police issue, that can only get worse because as inner cities continue to unravel, because of, as you mentioned, the policies of these many of them Soros funded anti-police district attorneys under the shadow of no cash bail, all those kinds of things where criminals are being let on the street. As crime continues to go up, as businesses shut their doors because of theft, as violence increases, as people in the inner city continue to feel under siege, that is going to make the police issue, like the border crisis, only get worse for Democrats. And those inner cities are the wellspring of Democratic political hopes.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to have the inner cities completely in their pocket when it comes to voting, or they don't have a chance to overcome the rural voters, small town voters, so on and so forth. And you're going to start to see a lot of those drain away, the votes, because of the police issue.
You think so?
And I do. And you know, I've saw polls even while we were here on the program talking about the now. These are polls. I understand what you're...
For what they're worth.
For what they're worth. That black support for Trump and Hispanic support for Trump is growing in those communities. Whether or not they stay home and don't vote at all, or whether they actually pull the lever for Trump, remains to be seen. But it's an unforced error on the part of the Democrats, because they chose to support Biden's policies on the border and chose to support the radical wing of the Democratic Party in their calls to defund the police. Those are unforced errors and risk losing votes.
Well, and to your point, on our website, AFN.net, put an AP story. This is an AP story up this morning. An Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll. Listen to this. This is on growing discontent amongst Democrats for Biden's border crisis. Roughly two-thirds of Americans now disapprove of how Biden is handling border security, including about 4 in 10 Democrats. 55% of black adults and 73% of Hispanic adults who were polled blame Biden for what's going on at the border.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, nobody's buying Biden's "this is the Republicans and Trump's border problem."
Right.
That's about the dumbest thing I've ever heard tried ever, huh, in politics. I mean, I don't know who sat around the table at the White House going, "Hey, let's try to blame the border on Trump." What do y'all got to say? Who think that's a good idea?
Well, isn't it disrespectful to voters? To me, it's as if they really think the American voter is stupid. They'll never figure out what we're doing here. If we just say it's the Republicans' fault, we want to hide funding for Ukraine in this bill.
Right.
And Republicans will vote against the border money we want to spend, which isn't really to fix the border. It's just to fast track people into getting in and getting citizenship. But we'll fool these dumb voters into thinking it's Republicans' fault.
I tell you what's going to be interesting to watch outside the presidential race, obviously, this November, is going to be at a city and state level in places like New York, where violent crime is absolutely out of control, running amok because of the social justice warriors and their idea that you don't need to put criminals behind bars. You need to just let them go, let them run free. And this was in the prime example, a glaring example, is the story you're talking about. If you didn't hear about it, in New York City last week, a police officer was shot in broad daylight in Queens, I think, on a traffic stop. He walks up to the car, and the fella in the car, did they get into a physical altercation or not? Or he just, anyway, I remember seeing it, but the guy in the car shot the police officer in the stomach. He had his chest vest on, his what do you call it, bulletproof vest on, but it hit him underneath the vest, penetrated his stomach, and he bled to death. He died.
He was trying to get the driver to exit the vehicle.
He was, but the driver wouldn't. So what happened was he shot him, and he killed him. Well, he was arrested. I mean, they knew who he was. They got him. The cops did.
He had 21 prior arrests.
That's what I was going to say. Yes. Then it was learned he had a rap sheet a mile long, 21 prior arrests. Here's my point bringing this up. Do the citizens of New York care or not? There's outrage among the police officer community. There's outrage among, I guess, people who are conservatives, the 17 that live in New York. But among the general public, will there be a response in the voting in New York City, state of New York, for example? This is what my point. I'm asking the question. I don't know the answer. Where they say, you know, enough is enough. This is the top issue. violent criminals ruining our communities, our towns. They're running free everywhere. They're not being punished. They're not being put in prison. Because here's what I would say. It's the people who are voting who are responsible for the criminals running amok, the violent criminals running amok. So it's a circle of self-destruction. Because you have the voters, let's say New York City, for example, the voters of New York, they vote for Alvin Bragg, for example, a Soros-funded DA, and others there, and they don't believe in putting violent criminals behind bars. Yep. They believe that there's already enough of them behind bars, and so we need to let them out. That's why you hear these turnstile. Violent criminals, they'll arrest them. The cops arrest them, they'll take them downtown. And then that afternoon, they're free. And they don't even have to post bail. There's no cash bail.
Well, I'm going to answer your question. I don't think it will matter to voters in New York City right now. I mean, we've seen the Michigan governor and the New York governor when we thought Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, Hochul in New York, when we thought they might be politically damaged by these kinds of spikes in crime, no, they seem to weather it. I don't think now, if you're in the police officer community, if you're in New York City, yes, you're angry because this murderer, the guy who shot the dealer,
the police officer,
he shouldn't have been on the street. The job of the New York City police officer is so frighteningly dangerous because they are having to stop repetitive lawbreakers and they don't know who is out on the street when they should be in jail or in prison.
Okay, so you have to conclude, and this is we're speaking. The majority of voters in the city and the state of New York, you have to conclude that they agree with George Soros and they agree with the lax treatment of criminals. They would say, well, I'm sorry the cop got killed, but I don't care that he has 21 arrests,
right.
The criminal. It doesn't bother me. He can have 25 just as long as he doesn't hurt my family.
Mm-hmm.
I guess is what they would say. They say that with their votes.
Yes.
Because the people who might say, well, I'm outraged at that. Well, they're going to go vote Democrat tomorrow.
And their view of the guy's rap sheet is that he's not guilty of all those crimes, but it's a systemically racist system,
right,
that has looked for certain individuals to arrest, and that's why he was arrested.
I remember reading a politician, I think this was in Minneapolis, which is basically the same politics as New York City. They're all Democrat, all the officials are. And he said, it may have been the state's attorney general or something. He said, listen, I know that there's going to be a lot of violent crimes committed by repeat offenders. But it's the price we have to pay for social justice.
Right.
That's what he said. So we got too many. What he was saying was we got too many black men behind bars. We're not going to put any more there. We don't care what they do.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just going to lay it out there. That's the view that these people are taking. And so the community who say, yeah, we support you on that, they're having to deal with the consequences of their votes. And their support for that attitude toward violent crimes. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And we've seen that over and over again. Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, same attitude towards police officers. And now they cry about crime. You know, these are smart people. You think you would put it together.
You can't.
If you're going to let the bad guys out.
You can't have it both ways.
No.
You can't have it both ways.
But your point about the only time it really seems to matter to voters in these blue cities or blue states is when it directly affects them. You know, we remember the state representative or state senator from Minnesota, the one who was carjacked.
Right.
Remember, she said, well, where are the police? But she's a pro.
She was a defund the police person.
To fund the police person.
And then when it happened to her, she wanted to know where are the cops.
Up in arms.
Yeah. it's idiocy is what it is. And as I said, it's almost like the citizens of these places have a death wish, because you start having violent crime run amok, you're not going to get businesses to move in. In fact, they're going to move out. This is happening.
Right.
San Francisco is almost a ghost town now, they say, you know, downtown.
Right.
Because of businesses moving out. People can't sustain the look at all the stores that are closing because of shoplifting.
Right.
In these cities. I mean, that's every day.
It's other policies, too. A lot of these stores closing because the city allows homeless out,
right.
drug use
right.
out.
That's what happens with progressivism. They get their utopia, and it's ugly. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.